Hear one thing from this, and then we'll get to the message. You know, last week I talked to you about owls. This is another one about owls. Makes one think, really, you know, about how people can believe in this evolution stuff and how illogical it is. Because just think of this. The owl is a bird that is made to function at night. Every part of the owl seems designed for finding and killing prey. Owls are raptors. An owl has incredible night vision, which allows him to see, or her, even when there is no moonlight. With his incredible hearing, the owl is able, now get this, and the owl is able to hear a mouse under 2 feet of snow. Isn't that something? That's quite hearing. Underneath 2 feet of snow. It has been said that if an owl can see you, it can hear your heart beating. This author said, during a walk in the woods, I once saw an owl watching me. It was a scary thought that this creature could hear my heart beating. Well, if an owl can hear a mouse under 2 feet of snow, what makes us think that they couldn't hear a human's heart beating or the beating of any animal? Right? Hear a mouse under 2 feet of snow? Owls need to be quiet in their flight in order to not frighten off their prey. God designed an owl's flight feathers to be fringed, so it's a silent predator. Other birds have crisp edges on their feathers, but not owls. The crisp edges make a more noisy flight, but an owl, no. And so they can't be heard. Now get this. If any of these parts, night vision, super hearing, silent flight, talons, they don't have feet like normal birds, they have talons, and they have a tearing beak. If any of those things were missing, the owl would not be able to catch its prey. The forest then would be overrun with rodents, and the owl would starve. If the owl had a robin's beak instead of the tearing beak, or they had the feet of a crow instead of talons, or they made a noisy flight like a goose, if just one feature was missing, the owl would not be able to find and kill its prey. Every part was needed for the owl to get its lunch, although these parts likely had other uses before the fall. What does that tell us? If any of those parts were missing, how could an owl evolve over eons of time and continue to exist? How would they survive? Doesn't make sense, does it? I don't think so. The owl was designed. When you see a design, you know what? Why, there must be a designer. Any logical person would know that, I would think. Would not one? I think so. To our text this morning, in Mark chapter 12. Last week I talked about what I call lion eyes. A takeoff from the Eagle song from Don Henley and Glenn Frey's song, Lion Eyes. But what the? Of what the Pharisees represented. And I wanted to make sure that I mentioned this, that what Jesus said whenever they asked him that question, and he said, you render to Caesar what is Caesar's, and you render to God's what is God's, that Jesus did not mean there. And many people, when they read that, they want to think that, well, Jesus means then that whatever our government wants, then we just acquiesce and do whatever they say. That's not what he was talking about. That's not what he meant. He was saying indeed that yes, God puts governments into place. We read Romans 13. Then in 1 Peter it tells us that. That God does that in his purpose of that. But Jesus was by no means, and this is where people can misunderstand what he's saying, Jesus by no means did not say that we are not to stand up against evil within our government. He did not mean to say that we cannot speak out against evil. Even that, if that is condoned by our government. That's why some say, well, whatever a country says, whatever law a government says, then you do it, no matter what. No. Because remember what Jesus said. You render to what is Caesar's, what is Caesar's. In other words, Jesus was saying, you pay taxes. Because that's what they were asking. He said, yeah, pay it. But then Jesus said, render to God's what is God's. And whenever he said, whenever he told them to, he said, give me a denarius to pay that head tax. And paying the head tax, because that's what they were asking. And he looks at it and he turns it over and he says, whose image is on it? And they say, Caesar's. He says, whose icon, did the Greek, is on it? Whose image? Not whose picture, not whose representation, but whose image is on there? That's very significant when he says that. Because what he is saying there is, when he said, then he says, render to God's what is God. They didn't expect that part. What he was saying by that, when he's talking about the whose image is that, he's also telling them, whose image are you? This coin has the image, the icon of Caesar. So you render to Caesar what is Caesar's. This coin, this is his. This is what you pay. He asks you to pay taxes, you pay taxes. But he says, never forget what he was telling them. Never forget, you are created in God's image. You are an image bearer. So render to God's what is God's. What is God's? See, this is what the Pharisees and that they did not like, because what Jesus was saying is, you yourself, you are God's. You belong to him. He created you in his image. And if the Caesar or the government asks you to do something or says something that is contrary to God creating you in his image, and what that means, then you render to God first. That's what Jesus was saying. That's very significant to remember that. That's why I reference what what we find, and the apostles learned that. They took that to heart. When we read in Acts chapter 5, when they're before the Sanhedrin, which was the governing authority of the Jews, like our Supreme Court, you know what Peter said? As for you, you decide whether you're going to obey God or men. But as for us, we will obey God. That's important to see, to remember. So I just want to bring that out. So now we turn to another episode with Jesus on that same Tuesday. Boy, Jesus had a lot going on. There was a lot. He was a lot of people coming to him. Last week we discovered how the Pharisees did their best utmost to trap Jesus with their question, and how Jesus caught them out in what they were trying to do. And the Lord turned the tables on them, so to speak, and saw through their lying eyes. You can't hide your lying eyes. Well, this morning in our text, we come to the third round by one of the groups sent by the Sanhedrin. They are still doing their best to discredit Jesus and turn the Jews, to turn the people against him. People are still trying to do that today, by the way. So first, let us investigate this group a little bit. And then second, we're going to look at the question they ask. And finally, the Lord's response to them. It is still Tuesday of that Passover week, as I said. And as I said before, this is a very full time for Jesus. You know, man, imagine the Lord's got a lot on his mind, but here come these groups of guys. You think the Lord, that shows the question that, do you think the Lord didn't know that they were coming and what they were about? Sure he did. They couldn't fool him. So here comes a third group. Look at our text here. Matthew 12, 18 through 27. Sadducees, who say that there is no resurrection, came to Jesus and questioning him, saying, "Teacher, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies and leaves behind a wife and leaves no child, his brother should marry the wife and raise up children to his brother." That's found in Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 5 through 10. There were seven brothers. They tell Jesus the story. There were seven brothers, and the first took a wife and died leaving no children. The second one married her and died, leaving behind no children. Then the third likewise. And so all seven left no children. Last of all, the woman died also. In the resurrection, when they rise again, which one's wife will she be? For all seven had married her. So listen, this third group is an interesting group, the Sadducees. It is this group of men. Interestingly, it is this group of men that are the most powerful in the Sanhedrin. The Sadducees are. They were very wealthy. They were what we would call the aristocratic class. They were also known as the ruler of the Jews. Their members were made up, although they were not as large as the Pharisees, their members were made up mostly of the chief priest and the high priest. Think of that. They most certainly believed that it was they who controlled things in and around Jerusalem and in Judea. They were not only dominant in the priesthood, they controlled what went on in the temple. So see, they were very powerful men. So you can imagine they were the ones who let the Pharisees come first and let the scribes come first. And now, on the third round, here they come. The others couldn't do what needed to be done, so now the Sadducees come. Did you know that even so, that is the case, that they are the most powerful group in the Sanhedrin? This is the only time that Mark mentions them. You read the whole Gospel of Mark. This is the only time he mentions the Sadducees. And overall, they're only mentioned 14 times in the Gospels. Isn't that interesting? When one considers the power these men had, the Sadducees had among the Jews and in the Sanhedrin, there are over 100 references to Pharisees and to lawyers and scribes in the Gospels, but only 14 concerning these men. Isn't that interesting? Now they got their name. Their name was derived from Zadok. Zadok was the high priest at the time of David and Solomon. And that's where they took their name from. And they developed around the time of a group called the Hasmoneans. And they became, as I said, very powerful. But their beliefs were different from the Pharisees. You see, the Sadducees only accepted the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible. The first five books of the Old Testament, I should say. Of their Old Testament scripture, the Sadducees only accepted the first five, and that was it. The books of Moses. And they rejected any belief that was not to be found in the Pentateuch. The Pharisees, on the other hand, accepted other Old Testament writings. They accepted the prophets. They accepted the other writings. They also accepted oral traditions. It was them, the Pharisees, contrary to the Sadducees, who came up with the various religious practices of the day. Don't you find that odd? Not the Sadducees, but the Pharisees did. And again, these two groups tolerated one another, but they did not particularly like one another. And because their specific bone of contention had to do with belief in angels, in spirits, and concerning resurrection. Notice I didn't say the resurrection, concerning resurrection. Now, it's also interesting that this group ceased to exist after the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in 70 AD. They were no more. That means the Sanhedrin was done with. And the temple was done with. So now they come to Jesus with a question of their own. Notice how they approach Jesus. Just like the Pharisees and the scribes did, these men call him teacher or rabbi. That's how they begin. They think they're beginning with flattery too. You know, teacher. However, they did not mean that when they called him teacher. They didn't really accept him as teacher or rabbi, but they called him that. Now, their question appears to be straightforward. In the resurrection, when they rise again, which one's wife will she be? For all seven had married her. Seems to be pretty straightforward, doesn't it? However, appearances can be deceiving. Ask yourself this question. What is the Sadducees' aim? What is their purpose in doing what they're doing? It wasn't just to mock Jesus or to deride him in any way or to just ask him a theological question and be done with it. They had a purpose as well. These men, the most powerful of the Sanhedrin, they wanted to discredit Jesus. They wanted to turn the people against him. Because, see, the Sadducees did not believe in resurrection, didn't believe in angels, didn't believe in spirits. The Pharisees did, which, remember the old saw, that's what made them fair, you see. But the Sadducees, you see, were sad because they didn't believe in resurrection or angels or spirits. But the others did. And most of the Jews of the populace, they believed in angels, spirits, and resurrection as well. But Sadducees didn't. And here they come. And they're asking Jesus a question. And they give him a scenario that they themselves do not really believe in. Why? Because they know the Pharisees, who are a majority, and they know that the people, the populace, they know they believe those things. So if they can get Jesus to say that he doesn't believe what they're saying, they've got him. Even though they don't believe. So very, you know, when you look at it, very logical and very, very ingenious, but very deceiving as well. So the Sadducees come to their question in a roundabout way. They proceed to tell Jesus a hypothetical, not a real, but a hypothetical situation. But when you look at it on the face of it, it's rather ludicrous and extreme. It has to do with Levirate marriage, what came to be known as Levirate marriage. Now, this has nothing to do with Levites either. That's not what that means. It comes from the word comes from the Latin word lever, which came to be known as Levirate or Levirate marriage. And lever in Latin means brother-in-law, not Levite. Doesn't have anything to do with Levites. But what they are referencing goes back to the Pentateuch. Deuteronomy 25, verses 5 through 10. So they ask their question. It is designed. Their question is designed to be unanswerable. Now remember, they don't believe in resurrection themselves. And this is significant. So now we see the Lord's response to the Sadducees. His answer is twofold. First, he deals with the marriage issue. Then he speaks concerning resurrection, which they don't expect him to do. They ask him about marriage. Well, resurrection indirectly, but they ask him mainly about marriage. So as we take each one in turn, as we look at the text, notice how the Lord responds to the Sadducees. And it brings up the question, why does he respond in that way? Notice what he says. Jesus said to them, "Is not this the reason? Is this not the reason you are mistaken? That you do not understand the scriptures or the power of God?" Notice what he says. Is this not the reason you are mistaken? That's an insult to them. They're the mostly chief priests and the high priests that make up the Sadducees Now, we don't know which ones came of the group of the Sadducees, but this is rather an insult. He's more harsh to them, the Sadducees, than the Pharisees at this time. Why? He purposely insults them. Why? Because they should have known better. Jesus' response is in what we call a chiastic form, or a chiasm. A chiastic form. And this is what he does. So I'll lay it out for you. This is what he says. You are mistaken. This is the chiasm. He says, you are mistaken. You are in error. You notice that? He tells us, these powerful men, you are in error. And then notice what he says there. You are mistaken. You are in error. And then this is what he says. To these Sadducees, who are chief priests, and the high priest is made of them too. The high priest probably wasn't there, but these most guys are mostly chief priests. The next thing he said, you are in error, but he also says this, you don't know. You don't know the scriptures. And then he says, you don't know. This is how you see the chiasm. You don't know the power of God. You the C is the power that raises the dead. And then we go back to A. Again, you are badly mistaken. Jesus goes from A to B to CC and then back to A. You are an heir. You are mistaken. You don't know the scriptures. You don't know the power of God, the power that raises the dead. You are badly mistaken. Now, he does that on purpose. See, the Sadducees believe in the continuation of life as usual. Jesus says, no, it is not. Jesus says it will be very different. Notice what he says in his chiastic form. Is this not the reason you are mistaken? You are in error. Is this? Just what they've asked. Just what they've laid out for him. He's saying, is this not the reason? That you do not understand the scriptures. Imagine that, telling them. These men who are chief priests and of the high priest, that they don't know the scriptures. or the power of God. For when they rise from the dead, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels in heaven. But regarding the fact that the dead rise again, have you not read? It goes back to that. Have you not read in the book of Moses, in the passage about the burning bush, how God spoke to him saying, I am the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but of the living. You are greatly, you are badly mistaken. And you can see that chiastic form there. What Jesus is saying there is, I know you don't believe in resurrection, but I will tell you this is that since you brought that up, bringing that up to me, and notice what he says. For when they rise from the dead, not if, but when, Jesus says, it is different. Jesus says, there is no marriage in heaven. For people will be like the angels. Now notice this too, and this is what people want to go to, is that, you know, when we die, when a loved one dies, what have you, they go up there and they get their wings. You know, it's a wonderful life, how Clarence earned his wings, you know. Every time a bell rings, teacher, an angel gets his wings. Really? Book, chapter, and verse of that one. Not. People do not become angels. Jesus was not saying that people become angels. He was saying that in heaven, there is no marriage in heaven. But people are like angels. That angels do not marry. They do not procreate. That's what he's saying. That people will be like that. That in heaven, Jesus is saying, there will be no need for marriage. There will be no need for procreation. There will be no need for that kind of a relationship anymore. That's what he's saying. But he's not saying people would be angels. And as Brother Don DeWelt said, the power of God will have brought into being that which Paul calls the spiritual body, in which sexual relations will not continue. That's what he's saying. And as Brother R.C. Foster said, to be the children of God and to enjoy his fellowship will so far surpass anything we have known in this world that all human relationships will be completely subordinated. That's what Jesus is saying. So very directly and very shortly, he ends the issue of marriage. He said, you are mistaken. There will be none. For when they rise, notice Jesus did not say if. He acknowledged the fact that there's resurrection, that he believed in it. And he forthrightly told them that. That's why he comes now, he comes back to the resurrection. And once again, you notice the chiastic structure here. Jesus is taking the Sadducees to task. Can you imagine that? These powerful, most powerful men in all of Jerusalem, Judea, and he's taking them to task. He's very harsh with them when he says what he does. You see, the Sadducees used the Pentateuch for their own purposes. To kowtow, to get the people to kowtow to them. To bow down to them. But they did not use it. They did not use it, the Pentateuch, to get to really know Yahweh. That's why Jesus told them, you search, when he told the scribes and the Pharisees earlier, he said, you search the scriptures from here to, from end to end, and you don't see me? You can imagine Jesus saying, how odd. You think you know the scriptures. That's what he was telling the Sadducees. You think you know the scriptures. But he said, you don't know the scriptures. You're mistaken. In the end, he says, you are badly mistaken. You see what Jesus, and what Jesus does here, and this is what we had a good lesson we need to learn when we're dealing with people. He met them on their own ground. Notice Jesus said, when they arise, but then notice what he says. Jesus doesn't go to Daniel, where it talks about them, you know, people rising again. He doesn't go to the prophets, because he knows the Sadducees don't accept that. But he goes to one of the books in the Pentateuch that they do accept and that they should know to dispel their thinking. He goes to Exodus. Exodus chapter 3, verse 6 is what he quotes. And what he tells them is this. Does it not say that God says, I am the God of Abraham. I am the God of Isaac. And I am the God of Jacob. What Jesus was doing to them was this. He's saying, does that not say that they are still living? He was pointing it out to them. It does not say that I was the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. He shows them in their own words, in the Pentateuch itself, that they accept that it says, I am currently the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And what that means is they're still alive. See, that's something they didn't believe. But Jesus shows them through their own word. He takes them, he goes to their own ground, so to speak. Just remember, they didn't accept anything but the Pentateuch. And that's exactly where Jesus goes to. See, that what the Lord is saying here to them, that they do not believe, that many people do not believe today, that the resurrection is a logical necessity. It's necessary. Because that's what he says. He's the God of the living, not of the dead. As Brother R.C. Foster says, and this is an important lesson for us, we'll close this morning with this. Most of our difficulties in contemplating the nature of heaven and the life after death arise from the failure to realize the power of God and the kind of love and devotion we are expected to have for Him. Think of that. We repeat that. As Brother Foster says, most of our difficulties in contemplating the nature of heaven and the life after death arise from the failure to realize the power of God. Don't you realize, understand, and see what this is what Jesus told them? You don't know the power of God? You're badly and greatly mistaken? For God is the God of the living. And He can raise the dead. You don't know His power. Is what He's saying. And as Brother Foster said, and the kind of love and devotion we expect to have for Him. See, in the final analysis, there's a lesson for us in this episode. Jesus had with the Sadducees that we dare not miss. And that's this. That's why it's so important that we know the Word, what Jesus said. We must not be mistaken as far as the Word is concerned. But there are many people who are greatly mistaken as far as the Word is concerned. Is this not the reason you are mistaken? You do not understand the Scriptures. See, Jesus is telling us that we need to understand the Scriptures. And He shows us how to understand the Scriptures. And He's also telling us there are many out there who do not understand the Scriptures. And He's also telling us that we need to understand the power of God. But that there are also many people out there who do not understand the power of God. And they do not realize it. But of all people, as Christians, we should understand the power of God. And believe that. Because in the essence, final essence, that's what it has to do with, is the power of God. And one day, those people who do not believe in His power, one day they're going to see that power. And we're all going to see that power. But brothers and sisters, we know the power of God now through His resurrection. This is the key. Jesus is telling them, he took care of their marriage issue just like that. But He was telling them that, and then not knowing the power of God, what He was telling them was this, that resurrection is the key. He was telling them, brothers, you have a chance. But if you don't believe in the resurrection, you're lost. You're done for. And that's why the Sadducees, what we read there, the Sadducees left Him. They didn't say anything. They just left. Now, that didn't keep them from doing what they were going to do. But they didn't have anything to say to Him. Because He took care of what they said and dispelled what they believed. And that's what we need to do with people today too. See, same thing. That's why we must understand the Scriptures. That we show people this. And we can show them the power of God. See, that He's the God of the living. And that there is life afterwards. Then when we die, we just don't go out, wink out of existence or perish. Let's stand. We're going to sing, "For God so loved the world, He gave His one and only Son." That's why He did. So that we too might be resurrected. And of course, first we're resurrected to newness of life because we're spiritually dead until we come in contact with Jesus. Oh, they moved it?
Apparently so. Just got a text about it.
So. Oh, okay.
So it's not this Saturday.